I'm George Eyster. I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Al Sparrow from the College of Human Medicine here at Michigan State University.
I'm Al Sparrow, going to answer some questions for Dr. George in a later episode, ask him a few questions.
To start, Al, I know you're from the East Coast. What brought you to Michigan State?
George, I was all East Coast, except for some military time when I was on the West Coast in the Air Force. But most all of my education, medical education, was on the East Coast. And when I finished my training in pediatric cardiology, actually my first academic appointment was at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. That school is not unlike the U of M. It kind of dominates the educational sphere in Virginia. And the medical school was very well thought of, and I really enjoyed my time there. However, toward the end of my first tour, I was approached by some of the people here in the pediatric department who were looking to bring subspecialists into the College of Human Medicine. And it turned out I was actually one of the first subspecialists here, and certainly the first pediatric cardiologist. So the attraction was a new medical school in a new place, a growing, exciting atmosphere, and I gave up what would have been a U of M-like life experience for branching out, if you will, on my own and trying to build something on my own.
Could you tell us what it was like when you got here at Michigan State as really one of the first specialists in the college?
Yes, it was very, very different than now, and in many ways probably better than now. There's something about building programs and bringing people in to develop something that you want to see and do that's very exciting. I was the first fully trained pediatric cardiologist in the state. There was a very active self-trained individual at the U of M at the time, a wonderful colleague of mine, became a wonderful colleague of mine, but in actuality, the first really fully trained, modern trained cardiologist in the whole state. Some of my colleagues from my former training place in Boston at the medical school at Children's Hospital Medical Center in Boston actually followed me. I tried to get one particularly to come to MSU, but they both went to Ann Arbor. So we have had a good association with the Ann Arbor Pediatric Cardiology Program and the Pediatric Open Heart Surgery Program there, as well as developing our own. But we were indeed ahead of them in terms of some of the things we did back in the 70s.
You lived and practiced in what I call the golden age of cardiology. Prior to that, I think the specialists in cardiology were pathologists, and I don't consider that a good situation. But tell us what it was like in developing what is today the modern approach to cardiovascular disease.
It has evolved and is so much changed. Let me just kind of think about that for a minute and tell you what it was like when I started training. There were less than 100 trained pediatric cardiologists in the country when I finished my training. I think my number was 112 or something. At that time, resources were so limited. One of the things I remember from my training time was that my mentor, Dr. Alex Natus in Boston, a wonderful man and built a wonderful program and advanced pediatric cardiology so much. But in those days, we were so limited in what we could do and how many patients we could take care of, how many we could study, that I remember that the trisomy patients, the Downs patients with heart disease, were not studied. they just weren't, we didn't have the resources to take care of them, and they were kind of pushed aside and in those early days not studied. We've come full length now. We can study, we have resources and ability to study and manage virtually every kind of a congenital heart disease patient that comes around. In those early days, again, we lost 95% of the seriously malformed heart patients. Today, we save about 98 or 99%. So I have been in this area through that 20, 25 years when mortality and progress has gone from total dismal, terrible results to nearly 100% success. It's been a wonderful experience, and I really appreciate it.
Your training at Boston under Alexander Anaitis is there at that time. There were only two or three training places in the country, and Anaitis was certainly one of the chief, if not perhaps the finest cardiologist, and certainly Boston had one of the finest, if not the finest, training programs. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Alex Anaitis was a man for all seasons. He was just the most giving, I should say, happy person, and just living in his success and his ability to watch his program grow and our trainees leave and go out and propagate really his program in so many other different places. And that's exactly what I did. I had the model. I had been there in Boston for several years and knew what it took to build a big program, a successful program. And so that was my aspiration, and that's indeed why I came.
During that time, the cardiovascular, particularly pediatric cardiovascular studies and cardiac surgery were blossoming out of Boston and probably Minnesota. So you knew and associated with basically all the people that were in that, doing those things at that time.
We all knew each other. There were very few established programs and programs of any weight. We kept in contact with each other. We saw each other at meetings. We exchanged stories and ideas and progress. And it was a wonderful but very small close club. It was very, very interesting. And you mentioned Minnesota, that there was also a very good program in Buffalo, which Alex was very close to because one of his very close friends ran that program. But these are, George, these are pediatric cardiology programs, and I don't want to forget, and we'll get into the surgical piece soon, but some of the surgery was advanced, not so much in this country because of limitations, but in other places, particularly New Zealand and Japan, where the procedures were researched and developed and came to us from there. We were unable to do some of the things they did in those days because of restrictions for patients' rights and so forth. But as a matter of fact, we'll get to it when we talk about surgery. We, the surgeon we recruited here, who you'll talk about soon, went to New Zealand and spent several weeks there copying their surgical procedures and efforts.
We'll certainly want to talk about that. But when you got here, diagnosis was dependent on the cath lab. Can you tell us about the facilities in the cath lab and how you developed that?
There was an active adult cardiology program at the Ingham Medical Center. In fact, Ingham at that time, we're talking in the mid-70s, dominated the cardiac sphere in this area. That's something that's changed today as well. But nonetheless, my colleagues here locally, when I came, were cardiology colleagues were adult cardiologists who had been trying to manage pediatric patients as well as they could, and who were kind of welcoming me and, if you will, provided me with many more patients than I was able to take care of in the beginning. But we also then shared the cath lab at Ingham, and that was, in those early days, it was a very basic adult-oriented cath lab, which I had to try to function in. Imagine trying to use the adult techniques, adult equipment, adult techs, and so forth, and bring a little baby in all of a sudden to this atmosphere. It was difficult, to say the least, and obviously we needed to change it. So we worked with the administration at Ingham, and they were really very cooperative. And we actually went to Europe, courtesy of the Siemens Corporation, with the CEO of Ingham, who is Ed McCree, a good friend of mine, to spend time in the labs and in the developing halls of the Siemens Corporation, where the technology was rapidly evolving and was focused really on children and babies. So as a result of that, we began to build a new cath lab, which was oriented toward babies and children, all new equipment, all state-of-the-art equipment, and we were up and flying within a year or two of getting here.
I'm a veterinarian, and I remember you said at one time that at the veterinary school here at Michigan State, we were better prepared to handle patients of your size than the facilities at that time.
I remember saying that, and the particular thing that we lacked that you had covered in spades was cardiac anesthesia, if you remember. I was ready to hire one of your vet anesthesiologists to work with us and put our babies to sleep and manage them that way. And I think we could have done that, except for credentialing. It didn't quite work out. But we were stymied with lack of good cardiac anesthesia. And we really envied your program, and we're happy for the support and camaraderie we got from CHM VetMed.
You stated that Ingham dominated the cardiovascular, at least the surgical aspects of it at this time, but you had to go about developing a pediatric program, and I know you spent a lot of time in the field pushing this. Can you tell us what you had to do to bring this new technology into being here in Michigan?
It was technology, and it was people. You need some depth with your program, and I needed depth in pediatric cardiology, and was able to recruit quite early several different people to work with me into further developing the program. But the key then was to recruit a surgeon, cardiac surgeon, well-trained in infant and child congenital heart surgery. And at that time, there weren't a lot of these people around. They were just beginning to come out of the training programs themselves, and it was difficult to attract somebody to a program, to be the first surgeon in a new program. But we got a lot of support from people like yourself, from the chair of the Department of Surgery, who I remember so well was really supportive and helped me go about recruiting our first heart surgeon. And that was when things really took off, and you remember that era very well.
It must have been really rewarding to, one, see these changes nationally, worldwide, actually, and particularly here at in the Lansing area. Tell us how you feel as being a part or the person that developed this?
Well, it was exciting, to say the least. That's why I said in the beginning that probably the best times, the times I remember most, were those early days, early years, to be the first to do an open heart surgical procedure on a child or infant in the state was wonderfully exciting. And we did that. We did the first infant open heart surgery at Ingham Medical Center in 1975, I think it was.
Okay. I know this was a high point for the program here. Can you tell us about that first case? And perhaps, well, we'll talk about the surgeon next, but tell us about that first case.
Well, we had, the surgeon was in place, and we, as I said, we had studied and gone to New Zealand, to Auckland, to study their open heart program and procedures. And shortly after coming back, certainly enough, a newborn infant presented in gross heart failure. And it was clear to me clinically that this was a very critical situation and this child was not going to survive unless there was intervention. So I talked to our new surgeon, and I should say I went ahead and confirmed my clinical diagnosis with catheterizing this child. And as you probably remember, this child had total anomalous pulmonary venous return to the wrong side of the heart, which put her in heart failure and threatened her life on a day-to-day basis. Now, we had seen a couple of these procedures done in New Zealand for this particular defect, and discussing it with our surgeon, he was really up and ready and thought we could do this. Now, remember, he and I both had to recruit a vast array of support people, particularly pump techs, for the open heart procedure, and again, anesthesia, which was always a little spotty and always worried me, especially in the early days. But nonetheless, he and I thought we were ready, and I think on this child's third day of life, we took her to the operating room, put her on cardiopulmonary bypass. This is a 5.5-pound little baby. And
as I recall, this was the smallest child in the world to have ever successfully been operated for this condition.
George, I'm not sure. I know in the state, I can't say in the world, because so much was being done in Asia and other places where we don't have a lot of information, but definitely the first in the state. And Lorenzo, Dr. Gonzalez-Levine, performed the operation totally with ease. We had all the support we needed. I was in the OR the whole time. We got the baby off the heart-lung machine. The heart started beating again. And I'm telling you, the post-op course was uneventful. She just did wonderfully well. Very exciting.
You had to cool her down and stop the heart. Can you tell us about that aspect of it?
Yes, in those days, you had to, we wanted to totally arrest the heart so the surgeon had an open field and could easily take care of things. We didn't want to have a bloody field or have a circulation ongoing. So we stopped the heart completely. Now, there were several different ways to do that in those days. You could do it pharmacologically, or you could do it with temperature. And we had watched in Auckland their procedure of just placing bags of ice on the heart and letting cooling it down that way and watching it. And we did just that. We had sterile bags of ice, packed the heart in ice, waited about 20 or 30 minutes. The heart just gradually slowed and eventually stopped. And, of course, the baby was supported by the heart-lung machine at that time. But with the total arrest of the heart and cooling of the baby to protect the rest of the baby, we were able to open the heart and do the procedure and successfully complete the operation.
You mentioned that many of these things were not done. I always considered that the United States has been a leader in cardiac surgery, but at that time we weren't. You mentioned New Zealand and Japan as the centers. Can you tell us why that was occurring?
I think there's no question that the atmosphere for experiential procedures and surgery was easier in places like Auckland and particularly Japan. I think the procedures really started in Japan, where the greater good won out over protective kind of ideas and protection of servant of the patient. So they were able to take chances and do new things, which were then transferred to more of the Western world, first New Zealand, and then, of course, to this country and to Western Europe. But they had done the hard work. They must have lost a lot of patients in developing some of these procedures. And our advisory boards and protective boards and research review committees would not tolerate some of that early procedural investigation that had to be done to advance us. So we really are indebted to the Far East for some of the things that happened.
It's kind of sad that it had to work out that way. You mentioned that one of the high points was most important parts of your developing the program was getting a surgeon. So you were able to get Lorenzo Gonzalez Levine. Can you tell us about how you got him and tell us about Lorenzo?
Well, Lorenzo was he had trained earlier in his career in New Zealand and thus had those connections, which we later used to take for us to go back and, as I told you, study their procedures. And then he had left there and was working in the Detroit area and not doing any congenital heart surgery. He was doing adult open heart surgery, but wanted to do congenital heart surgery. I got wind of him through our chair of the Department of Surgery here and through some of my colleagues in Detroit. And we were talking to several surgeons at the time, but he seemed to be my prime target for recruiting. He was in the state, he was close, he was well-trained, he was well-versed, and he was really a likable guy, and I thought I could work with him. So he came up here a couple of times to interview and go through that process, and he liked the challenge, he liked the idea, he liked everything we had in the hospital, and he liked the stuff that you guys were doing over in Vet Med. That helped us in recruiting as well. So lo and behold, we were successful in bringing him here, turning a non-surgical program into a surgical program, and off and flying in the middle and late 70s.
You drew cases from a good portion of the state. Can you tell us about the attraction and how you were able to develop that aspect of the program?
Well, the program sold itself. I mean, as I said, no one else was doing some of these things in the state, at least for the first couple of years. And so the word was out that if you wanted to stay in state, you would refer to this area. And we did get referrals from the northern part of the state, from the eastern part of the state, and particularly from the western part of the state, from the Grand Rapids area. I can remember, we're going to talk about Grand Rapids probably later, but I remember they had one pediatric cardiologist over there who referred to us if he had a surgical problem. But he used to call me for advice on managing his patients and whether or not they had to come over here or not and when they have to come over. And so we did. We had tentacles and referrals from a very wide portion of the state. It was pretty exciting.
Can you perhaps suggest why the Lansing program, Ingham program, which was certainly in the forefront in the state, and certainly was far ahead of Grand Rapids and the University of Michigan. What caused the shift?
Well, I think the emergence of a complete program. People around the state in those days were managing these patients as well as they could with medical therapy. And when medical therapy was no longer adequate and the patient's life was dwindling, they either sent them to a center abroad or possibly to one or two other centers in this country, or they faced the inevitability that they would lose the patient. And as I said, we lost a lot of patients before this program developed, statewide and nationally and internationally. The turnaround was just unbelievable. But it took 20 years of development and 20 years of practice and 20 years of technical development and diagnostic acuity and such to reverse that process.
You were here at the start of what is today's Michigan State University College of Human Medicine program. Can you tell us who were some of the legends or the leaders in the development of the college?
I think back when I was recruited here, the two people who excited me most were probably my legends, and that was the initial founding dean of the college, Andrew Hunt, who interestingly was a pediatrician himself. Andy had a vision for the school which was different from other schools. It was more community-based education. It was a total change from the previous educational models, and he had a lot of adversity in terms of trying to bring this kind of new educational model to the state and to the country, but he was successful in doing it, and thank God that he had the vision to do that. Now, he brought one of his colleagues, William Weil, to head his Department of Pediatrics. And it was Bill Weil, actually, who recruited me to be the first pediatric cardiologist and one of the first subspecialists in his department. Bill was a wonderful guy. And like Andy, he liked to bring people in and set them free to do their own thing, to get their own programs going, and not to dictate, model, or try to influence, but bring people with ability and vision. And that's what he did. He brought subspecialists one at a time in each particular area and developed a super department of pediatrics within which we had the Division of Pediatric Cardiology. So those two people were probably my legends and my reason for coming here.
You were department chair in pediatrics for a while. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, you know me better than to think that I'd liked administration. I was not an administrator. However, two things had happened. One, the era of the cath lab was dwindling, and that's where I had grown and developed and was extremely experienced and, if I might say, talented. But with the evolution of echo and ultrasound technology, the cath lab procedures were dwindling, and I didn't have enough to do. I was reading a lot of echoes, but it wasn't the same as being in the cath lab with a newborn baby. So at that time, our department had suffered a lack of leadership, and I was asked to assume the chair. And I guess I have to say, reluctantly, I did, though I have to also say it turned out to be fun, and I enjoyed that role in recruiting people in other divisions and other areas.
Could you compare the program when you were developing it in 1970s to the situation in the program today?
I don't really want to talk about that, George, because the program today is is much less exciting than it was at that time. Let me say what the program today in pediatric cardiology in this city, in this medical school, is non-existent in the medical school. Fortunately for the city, one of my colleagues has stayed on because she liked the area and has grown her family here. So she has stayed to give the community the luxury of a very well-trained pediatric cardiologist. However, there is no surgical program. There hasn't been for quite some time. The sphere of influence now in pediatric cardiology and in open heart surgery is largely at the U of M in Ann Arbor, where they have an exceptionally good open heart program. They're at the cutting edge of surgical procedure development and ability to handle all sorts of congenital heart defects. Interestingly, Grand Rapids is attempting to challenge in this area, and I mentioned to you how bereft of expertise Grand Rapids was when I came here. Well, today there must be 6 or 7 pediatric cardiologists in Grand Rapids. So there's been a total change of the sphere of influence and expertise, largely because of population changes, because of resources, and particularly because of philanthropy. So where we wanted to be the other medical center in the state, I think we had that era, but we missed the opportunity is no longer there, and things are moving toward the Grand Rapids area.
Pediatric cardiovascular surgery and cardiology is much more expensive. I hate to mention that, but it compared to adults, it's a lot harder, and it's a lot more time consuming, and in the end, more expensive. Is that a factor?
The resources that are necessary are much greater in infant open heart surgery as opposed, for instance, to adult surgery. Most of adult surgery, you know, is coronary bypass surgery, and this is actually being done closed even today. And it also is being done with catheters as well. So the adult sphere in cardiology and cardiac surgery has become very simple, if you will, and less resource dependent and much more resource generating. Programs live on adult cardiology resources. Funds that are generated from adult cardiology and adult open heart surgery and adult coronary surgery. And that's why it was difficult. We had to get the buy-in of administrators who have to watch the bottom line, and that particularly, as I mentioned at Ingham, was Ed McCree. Pediatric open heart surgery will never pay its way. It just is too costly. However, if you have a good program, you bring all sorts of other things to your institution, as happened with Ingham. Pediatrics in general is not a big supplier of resources in terms of generation of clinical funds. So some of these things have to be subsidized by other areas. It's just a given, and I empathize with the administrators, but I appreciate their having the vision to do that support and to make those commitments.
Perhaps the endowments in Grand Rapids are the reason for that.
No question. The philanthropy there has been outstanding. The medical school is rapidly moving in that direction. I think, though there will continue to be medical students here, the real thrust of particularly subspecialty medicine and pediatric center medicine is going to be in Grand Rapids.
That brings me up, what do you see as the future for the College of Human Medicine at Michigan State University?
You know, this is has been a very turbulent few years. As resources dwindle here in the state, and particularly in this area, the medical school has been underfunded and is continuing to be underfunded. So it has had to reach out for other resources and other support, namely in the research arena and in the philanthropic arena. And that's where the move toward Grand Rapids has evolved. I would have to say, if we were back in the 70s now and I was being asked to come here, I would probably not even visit, but I might visit in Grand Rapids, where I see things are going to come and going to be good. They're not at the level that I would like yet. They're not at the level of Ann Arbor, but they'll get there, and they'll have a good program.
Dr. Sparrow, you were influential, perhaps the most influential person in the development of the pediatric program here in Lansing, and as we mentioned, in the state. It was certainly one of the premier programs, the premier program in the state, and one of the most influential around the country. How does it feel to be a part of that?
Well, it's very rewarding gives me good feelings to recollect and talk like this. Those were very, very happy, exciting days. I do not regret one minute of my time here. It's been a wonderful ride. I've enjoyed the people. I've enjoyed the community. I've enjoyed the programs we've developed. And it's been just a delight. I always look for a small town with a strong medical center atmosphere. And there aren't a lot of those around, but Lansing area is one. All my life I'd been commuting for 30, 40, 60 minutes each way to get to the downtown Children's Hospital. Here, one of the greatest things was that I was never more than 5 minutes away. And that was very big. I love this community. It's been nice.
Well, thank you, Dr. Sparrow. I speak for myself, and I believe for the Lansing community for what you've done and the program that you got here, the program that you developed here, and the lasting effect of that program here in the Lansing area.
George, thanks you. Thanks for arranging this and doing this with me. I know we're going to reverse roles soon, but I wanted to say in concluding that it's kind of interesting that the two of us have gotten here, both having our roots in Maryland and both ending up in Michigan. But it's been fun, and I want to thank you as well.